We have scheduled just a very brief update from Mr. Olson and Mr. Seaver from the Seafood Council. So we'll have other opportunities, but if you could give us a quick rundown.
Well, I'm gonna let George start the meeting as an example of a long-term industry player. He's involved with a company that has effectively harvested for four decades now, and he was an original founder of the Seaweed Council. So we're gonna start out with him showing one facet of the industry.
Hi, George Seaver, and thank you for the opportunity. I've been in front of several of you at different times in the real room with real desks. Yes, been processing rockweed for about 40 years. I moved to Maine in 1977. It has been a kind of under the radar industry for several decades. And in the past one or two, it's the products that we make from the seaweed at Ocean Organics in particular have gotten much more recognition and credibility. We used to make snake oil, and now we make biostimulants, and we sell them all over the world, literally. We are based in Waldoboro. There's another seaweed processor in Waldoboro. And the short message I'd like to get across is our business has grown very well. We make liquid extracts that have a real place in the future of agriculture. I sent off, it was definitely a promotional flyer, but it's legitimate information about how our products have a real role in growing food when there's bad conditions. We've always known it, but now it's been recognized. There's probably, I'm going to guess, 10 companies in the world that are processing seaweeds to make agricultural extracts, and we're one of the older ones. We did a lot of turf products for years, and now we're back into agriculture. The main message, when any of you would have seen me before, it probably would have been to hear me saying that we're not hurting the ecosystem. There's a very legitimate question that has always been around. In fact, we were asking it of ourselves back when the Maine Seaweed Council was formed. At what point could we ever do ecological damage or any impact really from harvesting seaweed commercially? It's an industry that's grown, I would call it slowly, over the 40 years. The main use that we do, as to say, is liquid extracts, which don't take as much seaweed as when you dehydrate it to make seaweed meal, which is the other primary use. But in any event, the question about could we be hurting the ecosystem is a very, very good, legitimate question. But what we have demonstrated with the rate that we've been harvesting and the way we harvest is that, no, it doesn't have any impact. We harvest about 2% of the rockweed biomass, as is estimated, and Mother Nature turns over about 40% per year. So our effect is trivial compared to the natural effects. There's one other element of it. I know it's part of the Maine Seaweed Council and it's part of the fisheries management plan that we worked on for several years ago. DMR is well positioned, and we help them get well positioned to protect this resource and the ecosystem, the whole ecosystem. I tried to send a couple of letters we got from DMR when we were having a discussion with some other people who were concerned about the ecosystem. DMR is positioned very beautifully to keep us, our industry, if it ever grows to the point where it could have a detrimental effect on the ecosystem or even an impact, they're well positioned regulatorily to take care of the situation. So the legitimate question about the ecosystem, which is probably what sometime I'll be talking to you about again, it's a fair question. It just is under control. We are the marine resource that is not a problem. We are not affecting whales. I mean, we are the easy people for you to think about, and I think probably Pat Kelleher is grateful that we aren't accused of killing anything, especially mammals. But at any rate, we are not your problem. We don't ever expect we will be because of regulations that are in place. Our industry was not hurt. In fact, our best 2 years in history were the last two, in spite of the pandemic, because it is recognized nationally and internationally that these materials are becoming more and more necessary tools for growing food. So the future is bright for this product category after many, many, many years of doing research and promotion. So we are not the problem. We've got a lot of jobs, a lot of money moving around, and it's a growing product category that we feel really comfortable about. So Talif can give much more. Talif's been doing the food side of it forever, and I've been involved in the agricultural side of it. So take it, Talif.
Well, this is a prime example of how proactive the Maine Seaweed Council has been. I opened up aquaculture for seaweed in Maine back in 2006, 2007, and immediately the Seaweed Council invited me to become a member and to be involved. The Seaweed Council, and what I'm going to do is just give a broad overview of how vibrant this industry is right now and how much growth potential it has. The Seaweed Council started out with the Ocean Organics, North Atlantic Kelp, Maine Coast Sea Vegetables, and some others. They've got a 40 or 50 year history of protecting the resource. Moving on into the future, our goal is to continue to do that. The Seaweed Council is extremely well represented in that we have producers like Ocean Organics. We have harvesters who harvest from the wild resources. We have aquaculture components. We've got scientists involved. We work with the University of New England, the University of Maine, Bigelow Labs, Maine Maritime, and the list goes on and on and on. And the beauty of this is we're proactive in trying to stay ahead of the game. When you look at the product spreads that we have now, we're doing everything from environmental assessments. I'm working on a carbon sequestration experiment right now. We're working on new food products to expand the uses of seaweed. And what we're doing here is we're creating and expanding a job base that's already based on a very solid history as represented by George and the other companies. This has been going on for a long time. And it's just getting better. We're creating more infrastructure, and we also help support the infrastructure. Even our aquaculture component is really just an extension of an existing commercial fishery. I remember as a kid on Bailey's Island in the 60s, watching the college students who were diving for colloids back then. Well, in 1970, that went to aquaculture in the Philippines and created a million jobs there. What's nice here is we have the long history of protecting the resource, expanding the industry uses and methods. We're actually going into aquaculture preemptively before there is undue pressure on the natural resource, so we can maintain a balance of natural harvest and supplement that with aquaculture as we see this continued growth. Seaweed's being used in everything now, from food to fertilizers. Well, I've been involved in fuel experiments. We're looking at that people are looking and using them in cosmetics. They're being used for plastics. I've been involved in a couple of large-scale fuel and other type experimental things that we're going to see open up a lot of opportunities for the state. This is a great use of shared waters, and it does several things. It can supplement existing fisheries and fisher people who are already on the water. It can give young people a chance to get on the water and an industry that is still open in the wild harvest and the aquaculture side, but it also supports the existing infrastructure. Whether it be the gas station on the way to go get source tissue up the Damariscotta River, whether it be Dave Violet's Maine Marine Products down on Commercial Street, Hamilton's, we support all this waterfront infrastructure. And the ramifications now are being so broad. I just want to ask you to really keep an open eye, because you'll see things come at you piecemeal. You'll get one bill here, one bill there. I just want to ask you to take the opportunity here to really put into perspective that this is a very broad scale industry, and there are too many facets. I'm not going to put up any statistics now. You can go online and find statistics all day long, but we've got some really good stuff going on in this industry, and we really look forward to working with you so we can continue on this. At this point, I'll take questions if there are any.
Talif, I'd like to stick one more tidbit in that you just brought to mind. There's a natural complementary nature between aquaculture wastes, whether it's the land-based aquaculture produces waste. We are finding ways to add value to it. That's the short version. And some of those compounds are very complementary or symbiotic with the extracts we already make. So we are already in the market of selling specialty fertilizers, And right, we're in fact within 100 yards of our factory is the future site of where they're going to be growing eels on an RAS system. And also there's another effort that's further along, not as far commercialized, of growing oysters, land-based oysters in Waldoboro. So we call it the Waldoboro Business Park, but we imagine it may become the Waldoboro Aquaculture Park one of these days. And all these materials can complement each other and add value to each other. So it's a very, very interesting opportunity as we look at these other related activities.
To pull that back to seaweed, there's also several types of seaweed that can be grown as part of the water filtration system for some of these onshore aquaculture projects that are lining up. So the potential here is limitless. And I thank you so much for your time here, and I would love to answer any questions.
We have Representative Thorne has a question, and then Senator Mirma.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I actually have two-part questions, if you will, please, for Mr. Seaver, Mr. Olson. First, what's the number of species that you're collecting? And then harvest points, are there designated harvest points, or is any point along the main coast open for harvest?
Well, we're working with three different, we're working with the red, the green, and the browns, and there's several species, subspecies that come underneath those. And they grow in different energy zones up and down the coast. Technically, right now, seaweed harvesting is pretty much wide open, and most of the compliance has been through Maine Seaweed Council members voluntarily working with good practices. We are seeing more and more proactive on this. We've been working hard to get zones designated so we can get a better grasp on who's harvesting where, when it's been harvested, so that we don't return to those spots too quickly. Until the last decade or two, as George said, it really hadn't been a problem because it was such a specialized industry. But now that we're seeing broader and broader uses and more participants, that definitely means that we need to pay really strict attention.
I could add just a little bit. In terms of the species, the biggest single harvest in terms of tons per year is Ascophyllum rockweed, the intertidal rockweed. But one of the interesting things that's also happening as we proceed is we're finding, for example, if you're growing sugar kelp, there's parts of that plant that you may consider waste, and we are looking into ways to process it. So that kind of comes into it. There's Pat joining us. Where we can harvest, there's a little bit of a debate, and some of you may have watched us debate it last year. And Pat Kelleher can answer better than I can, but there's some question about private ownership of the intertidal zone that in many of our minds is still not fully resolved, just because it's such a tricky thing to have a deed to the intertidal zone, not to mention driving pins in the mud. But anyway, we pretty much harvest where we want. Sometimes we need to get permission, sometimes we don't. The very definition of intertidal zone gets a little shaky when you start having submerged ledges, but it ultimately boils down to our proper practices. We actually at Ocean Organics do all hand harvesting, which no one even notices. But so in answer to your question, where do we harvest? We harvest geographically as near possible to our factory because we're going to be bringing it back.
Okay, thank you. And Senator Mirmont.
Thank you, Representative McCree. The issue comes up every time we talk about this, about you really nailed it. You're hand harvesting. I've done that with Tollef before and watched that he leaves a good amount. Those under that kelp is a nursery for so many different things, that some of which are already endangered, some of which are not, but could be if they're not left to thrive. And then we hear about the noise of a barge that can, or boat that can, tuck in close and get that in the intertidal, even if they're authorized. Equipment with no mufflers. These are the complaints, and I bet we'll hear them again. So just quickly, though, because we are on a schedule, is it just the commercial harvesters with the big equipment that are causing the problem? And then we can work with the department about rules on that, or are they not causing a problem if you're only harvesting 2% of the seaweed and we just need to get them to be better neighbors?
I think with the 2% being real key on that, Senator, is that there is not that much adverse effect on the wildlife. A lot of the wildlife that lives, or sea life that lives in the intertidal, comes and goes with the tides also. I think there's definitely a big better neighbors issue, and that's something that we really need to consider. I'm working closely with scientists at half a dozen different universities, and I have not had one scientist yet say, this is damaging seed stock, root stock for other species, that this is creating any permanent damage. Ice scouring does more in any given winter than all the mechanical harvesters combined. But that said, there have been many instances where there have been some bad neighbor things, tides working at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I think those are the things we need to address. And those can be addressed by more statutory things, like you don't fire up construction equipment before 7 a.m. Maybe there's a distance of proximity, but we can look at this from other ways. There are better ways than a complete shutdown or black and white, you know, NIMBY situation. There's actually a lot of common ground here that we can work on.
I think it's also worth pointing out that because of the time to grow the seaweed back, we only cut it down so it's like 16 inches, and there's tremendous amounts of the coast that are never going to be practical to harvest because of their distance or their location or the wave act, whatever it is. There's far more coast that you would never harvest than that you would consider harvesting. But the other thing about the harvesters is, and some of them have been too noisy. I don't have a mechanical harvester, but there's no question sometimes they've had bad mufflers. But they're in an area like maybe every 2 years or maybe every 3 years. And this is going to sound a little snarky, but a lobster boat goes by every 3 days, sometimes without a muffler. So our impact is much less frequent and more startling if it is at 6 a.m. for sure. But in the grand comparison of things, we're not hard to get along with if we just have good mufflers, and the mechanical harvesting is no more or less impactful in terms of the ecosystem if it's done properly. But it is sometimes has been noisy, and sometimes people moved here because they wanted it quiet. So we come to grips with that.
We'll keep it in perspective then when we're hearing any of those bills. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. On the Maine Seaweed Council website, there's actually a video that shows the different kinds of harvesting.
Great. Really good for people to look at. Well, thank you both for sharing your time with us. And I know this was really quick. This is an issue that does come up, and we'll know who to call. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Appreciate it. Senator Mearmont, back to you.